We'll be taking a look at testing private wells coming up next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with two guests today. Steve Alice is Drinking and Groundwater Regional Supervisor for the Department of Natural Resources. Pleased to have him with us. Steve, welcome. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you for the opportunity to be here, Larry.
And Dr. Henry Anderson is Chief Medical Officer for the Wisconsin Department of Health and Family Services. And Dr. Anderson, thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Well, you know, the news, let me give the number before I get into questions myself here. If you want to join in, give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And certainly if questions about how to get your well tested or the quality of the water, certainly feel free to join in. And let's talk about what's the big story in the Associated Press and elsewhere about tainted tap water around the country. Is that a problem for the private well water in Wisconsin? Steve, what do you think?
Well, pharmaceuticals, that's the focus of the article. It was in Monday, Tuesday's, and this morning's paper. It's just a relatively new area of research and testing. It's something that's only been looked at for the last several years. The first couple years of that really related to surface water testing. A lot of the concern was that a lot of the fish and amphibian species can be affected by low-dose levels of estrogen compounds. I think it's been more recent that we've started looking at drinking water sources. The article mm-hmm. in the paper, a lot of those were surface water sources for drinking, and that's where the focus of the testing has been. There has been some testing of groundwater, and pharmaceuticals have been detected. But right now, we just really have very, very little data.
Oh, data on that. So we don't really know. And I, Dr. Anderson, I guess we don't know really the health of potential health effects.
Well, certainly for the pharmaceuticals, we know what they're used for and what their effects are. On the other hand, at these very low levels, that really this is a laboratory issue, we're able to detect these things. So it's an early warning that we need to pay attention what's on the surface, what we're doing with our waste discharge and things. But right now, none of these levels are at levels for the human population that we'd be concerned. But it's a warning.
Yeah, it's a warning. Well, you know, here we are right in the middle, if I'm not mistaken, of National Groundwater Awareness Week. Are we not, Steve?
Yes, we are.
And you want everybody to have their well water tested.
Yeah, the message we try to put out is that on an annual basis, everybody should at least test their well for bacteria. And depending upon if you know your nitrate level, that's another test that we recommend on an annual basis. The other time that we recommend testing is any time that somebody notices a change in the aesthetic of their water. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, they detect a change in color, a change in odor, a change in taste. Then that's another reason to have your well tested. Sort of a third category that falls into testing or treatment and testing is last August in the southwest part of the state, we had some massive thunderstorms, and a lot of private wells became flooded. And we really want to put the message out as we come into a potential flooding season here in the next few weeks, that if a private well becomes flooded, the message we want to get out is treat that well first and then sample it, because there's a lot of bacterial problems with surface water getting into wells if the top of the well becomes covered with flood water.
And just to talk about it for a minute on the health side of things, what's our major concern about nitrates, for example? If we've got nitrates in the water, what can that mean from a health perspective?
Well, the most vulnerable population for nitrates are newborns and very young children, because they can't handle the nitrate quite as well. And so what the disease we're concerned about is what's called blue baby syndrome. So anybody who brings a newborn home, any mother who's pregnant, we encourage them before they bring a new child home, if they have a private well, to have it tested, know the nitrate level, because it's a very acute poison, actually. It doesn't build up like some of these do. And so a child who's drinking that contaminated water through a bottle or mixed formula is at risk, and that's why we want to know about it.
Okay.
And along those lines, I don't know about all counties, but a lot of the counties have testing programs for households that pregnant women and infants are in. So if somebody's on a private well in a county, they should contact their county health department.
And they might get that for a low cost or maybe even free?
I think in some cases it might be free, but certainly low cost. But it's something that the county health nurses are very interested in knowing.
Yeah, sure. The number to call again, by the way, is 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, you can reach us at 263-1890. 263-1890 if you've got a question or comment as we talk about testing private wells during this week, National Groundwater Awareness Week. It runs from March 9th to the 15th, and we want everybody to get their water tested. And would you wait in a situation, as I'm thinking about this, potential flooding, maybe you've got a well that gets flooded. How do you know if your well is flooded, by the way? Does it bubble up to the top or what?
Well, I think most people are going to know just by looking around their property. I mean, if they have to be evacuated because of flooding, then they should just know or assume
for sure
that their well has been flooded.
And most of them should know where their well is actually
sure
located. So if you see your wellhead is underwater, you're in trouble.
Yeah, you see the wellhead underwater, you start seeing debris around the well that looks like flowing water. Those are all things to look for.
Yeah.
But because of the amount of bacteria in surface water and well caps are not air or water tight, they are allowed, they're required to breathe, really. And that provides an avenue for that surface water to get into the well.
Would you recommend waiting a little bit, or would you just say, well, let's just go ahead and get it done right now?
After the floodwaters recede, that would be the time to have it treated. Hire a well driller, pump installer, have it treated. And then usually what happens is that the chlorine solution will stay in the well maybe up to 24 hours. A day later, you flush that material out of the well. And then we usually recommend waiting another couple of days or a week to actually test the well so that we don't have chlorine residual in the well. We want to see that the well has been properly contaminated. And if there's chlorine still in the water, then that can affect the results of the test.
And can you shower while that's happening while you're waiting? You just don't drink? Or what is it, Dr. Anderson?
Well, the main thing is you don't want to drink the water, especially if it's contaminated. And virtually all of the wells, if they are inundated, will get contaminated. So
yeah,
it needs to be treated. But showering, flushing toilets, things like that. Of course,
go
if you shower and brush your teeth at the same time, you don't
have
the water in your mouth.
Yeah. So bottled water in that case?
Bottled water or treated water.
Yeah.
You can treat it yourself.
Yeah, treat it yourself. Well, Ron in the town of Dunn has a question for you, so let's go there. Ron, hi. Thank you for calling.
Thank you much for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because I hope this subject is related. It has to do with the decrease in the groundwater levels in the Madison area and other parts of the state that's been getting some publicity lately and would likely impact private wells, including my own. There's been some recent work by Professor Calvin DeWitt at the University of Wisconsin that shows that the significant development taking place in the northeast section of Fitchburg is decreasing the water level significantly in other wells. And I wonder if this is something that your experts would care to comment on.
All right. Thanks for calling. Steve, Alice?
Sure. Yeah, actually, declining water levels is something that we are, as a program, our drinking water and groundwater program is paying more attention to. The legislature had a groundwater advisory committee, and that was one of the issues that they addressed was groundwater quantity. Here in Dane County, what's really been happening is that we've been requiring the municipal wells to pretty much try to get to the deeper aquifer. Most of the private wells in Dane County are going to be in the shallower aquifer. The deeper aquifer is something referred to as the Mount Simon Sandstone. It's something we require municipal wells to be cased into. By casing, that's the steel pipe that goes into the ground, and above the casing, the water doesn't enter the well. It's below the casing that water does enter the well. So here in Dane County, we are aware of that concern of declining water levels, and the municipal wells, like I say, have been, we've been requiring they be cased deeper, but the shallow aquifer is really where most of the private wells in Dane County are going to be located.
For how deep do you have to go to get to that deep aquifer?
Here in Dane County, it varies, but it's a couple of hundred feet.
A couple hundred feet, and you're into the end.
Right.
And so,
and then most municipal wells are going to be on the order of 900 to 1,200 feet.
Okay. And a typical standard private well would be?
Private well would probably be closer to, depending upon where you are in the county, between 100 and 200 feet deep total and may have 60, 80 feet of casing.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Ron, for calling. Appreciate it. Gary in Wausau, it's your turn. Hi, Gary.
Hello. I have a question regarding dug wells with the rock linings. What's the status of those wells that have been dug out maybe years ago, probably dug maybe even 100 years ago, possibly? They don't go very deep. Typically, they're maybe 20, 25 feet at the deepest.
Those all dug wells really should be properly filled and sealed. Dug wells, like you just referred to, they're often very old. They're going to be 70, 80, 100 years old. The primary issue with dug wells is that they do not seal out surface contaminants. So surface contaminants can enter a well. There are dug wells around that are still being used, and they really should be properly filled and sealed. And for that property, a new well should be drilled. Dug wells just really are not going to maintain safety from a bacterial standpoint.
And I think the other issue.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Dr. Anderson.
I mean, one of the issues you also have to be aware of is that these dug wells are really a conduit into the aquifer below, so that even if you aren't using the water, every time something runs in there, it goes into the aquifer, and a well somewhere else can be contaminated. So, you know, you're really just providing a window there that anything that gets in there.
Yeah, the dug well is basically short-circuiting all the filtering capacity of the ground. So that Dr. Anderson makes a great point. Is that another reason to get rid of these dug wells?
Okay. Thanks, Gary. Appreciate the call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. Andy in Milwaukee is next. Hi, Andy.
Hello. I actually work for a water treatment equipment manufacturer. There are many of us here in Wisconsin, more than in many other parts of the country. We've been getting quite a number of calls from consumers just because of the publicity that's surrounding the stories that have been appearing this week. And we know, for example, for some of these concerns like pharmaceuticals, maybe reverse osmosis in combination with activated carbon is one of the best solutions. But none of these systems are really independently tested and certified for a number of these contaminants. The contaminants are just too new, or there's not enough data. And I was wondering, what recommendations are your guests making when consumers call and ask specifically about the contaminants mentioned in the stories that are appearing?
Okay, good question. And Dr. Anderson, you want to start?
Yeah, Part of the difficulty is one getting testing, and when we say pharmaceuticals, that's like saying chemicals. All of them are different. They all have different solubilities. They have different ionization properties, and treatment issues are still very much under development. So we really don't recommend that people go to a specific treatment device for pharmaceuticals. There are other chemicals that are very good. There is a certification process for taking or getting specific products licensed and certified in the state. I think the Department of Natural.
The Department of Commerce is the one that actually maintains a list of approved products for treating different types of contaminants. Pharmaceuticals is such a new issue that there are not any really approved devices out there. The caller referred to reverse osmosis and activated carbon, and from my knowledge of those, that would probably be the way it's going to go in terms of a treatment. But the information is so new about pharmaceuticals that test data is just not available.
Oh, interesting. Thanks, Andy. Appreciate the call. We're talking about testing water and testing private wells today with our two guests, Steve Allis, Drinking and Groundwater Regional Supervisor for the Department of Natural Resources, and Dr. Henry Anderson, who is Chief Medical Officer for the Wisconsin Department of Health and Family Services. Join in with your questions at 800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. I'm Larry Mueller. Keisha Mabra, our on-air producer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Steve Ellis of the Department of Natural Resources and Dr. Henry Anderson of the Wisconsin Department of Health and Family Services, our guests today as we talk testing private wells. Carrie in Balsam Lake has a question for you guys, so let's go there. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. Basically, our problem is our water is turning our blonde hair orange. And I have a teenage daughter who is not too happy.
So I bet.
We have a water softening system, and we bought this house a couple years ago, and the water was tested. Everything is fine. You know, we add the salt, but something's happened where it's just not doing its thing.
So lots of iron in the water, would that be?
There's two things that come to mind, actually. One is the possibility that it is iron. If there's iron in the water, the caller's likely to notice staining around her plumbing and other fixtures.
Yeah.
You do notice that, a yellow or an orange.
If you have a drip, you'll see it.
Yeah, if you have an orange staining around your bathtub or sinks, that type of thing, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so that may be part of your issue, is that your water has too much dissolved iron in it. A water softener is often the first technique used to treat iron, but if there's too much iron and your water softener can't handle it, then you will need to go to a specific iron treatment device.
Okay.
I would look in the yellow pages under water treatment company, and they can come out, they'll do some analysis of your water, and give you an advice on what treatment technology to use.
Okay.
The other thing to keep in mind is that typically one just softens the hot water, and so it's possible your cold water may still have that elevated levels of iron. The other thing that I've heard over the years, although I haven't been directly involved with this in terms of changing hair color, is copper can sometimes be an issue. So when you contact that water treatment company, they should be able to run a test on your water for copper. Is your house relatively new?
3 years old.
Okay, that would be something that you might worth checking into, particularly if you do have relatively new copper plumbing.
Okay.
And you may want to talk to your hairdresser because there are, you know, different, this is assuming you may color your hair as well, and usually the turning color has, you get an interaction between the metals that are in the water and the chemicals that are used in the hair dye. So it may be they
some
usually know about it, and there may be an alternative color agent that you could use that would avoid that.
Okay, well, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling, Carrie. Appreciate it. And your teenage daughter will probably kick in for some of the cost of that that new treatment, just to get her hair back to normal.
Or she may like orange hair.
Well, maybe she likes it. Yeah, that could be. It doesn't sound like it in this case.
What are the team colors?
Yeah. John in Waupaca, your turn. Hi, John. John, are you there?
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I got a couple of questions. One is it sort of bothers me on groundwater with municipal or with private wells with the farmers and all these people with their big irrigating systems. Now, by me, in about a three-mile radius, there's about 10 of these, and they pump from 800 to 1,000 gallons a minute, and they run them and run them and run them. And why doesn't the DNR have some regulation, seeing that groundwater is everybody's resource? Why do these individuals have the right to suck all of the water out of the ground? The streams go down. The little lakes get sucked down because of the water level dropping.
All right. Steve Ellis?
Sure. The department does regulate high-capacity wells. A high-capacity well is basically any property that pumps from one or more wells 70 gallons a minute or about 100,000 gallons a day. The irrigation wells that you're referring to, they do typically pump in the 800 to 1,000 gallons a minute. A change in state statute a couple years ago has given the department a little bit more authority to regulate those types of wells. And the process so if somebody is going to propose a new well, they will come to the DNR with that application. And then as part of our review process, we do look at what will be the impacts from that well on outstanding resource waters in the state, exceptional resource waters in the state. Those are two designations trout streams in the state and then springs. So if a proposed well is within so many feet of those resources, then the department does have the ability to request the applicant move it further from that resource, to modify the pumping rate of that resource or of that well, and possibly even modify the construction of that well.
Now, you mentioned proposed. So the ones in place are grandfathered?
The ones in place are grandfathered. That those wells were approved at a time where the department had fairly limited authority in terms of modifying a high cap proposal, proposed well. And for a number of years, really the only criteria is would it affect a municipal well. But with the change in state statute a couple years ago, we do now have these other surface water resources that we look at in terms of the review for that proposed well.
Mm-hmm. All right. John, thank you for calling. Steve in Richland Center, your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you today?
Great. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, I live in a rental property, and, you know, there's two houses on a property, shared septic. Landlord has a contract with a septic, you know, firm to come out and pump it out when needed. And, like, when the weather's fine and the septic guy can get out across the street into the farmer next door's field, he just pumps septic out, drives right across the road and spreads it right across the street into the farmer's field, which runs off into one of the creeks, which it turns runs into the Pine River, which washes into the Wisconsin, and so on and so forth. I'm just wondering, what, you know, is there, is that type of thing allowed? Is there special permits needed for that? Or, you know, how's that affecting the environment?
All right, let's talk to Steve Ellis first about that.
Well, I'm going to have to really pass on this one because I don't know the department's septic rules. But what I would recommend you do, though, is Richland Center is in the south central region for the Department of Natural Resources. What you should do is call the DNR's regional office. That phone number is 608-275-3266 and request to talk to somebody from the wastewater program specifically related to septage. And they should be able to answer your question as to whether that's an acceptable practice. I'm just not knowledgeable on the septic codes.
And the spreading on farm fields is a licensed operation.
So you need to be licensed in order to do that.
Right. They got to get a permit and have an arrangement with the farmer about it. But sewage sludge, whether it's pumped out of a septic or coming out of a sewage treatment plant, much of that is land spread, but it does have metals and other contaminants in it that the farmers need to pay attention to, or they end up with
some problems.
Problems with growing plants on it. But the runoff issue should be a part of the approval process that
that they have to go through. Well, yeah. Then, and that number again was 608-275-3266.
Yes, that's the number for the regional office in Fitchburg.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. Give them a call. Mary in Wilson, it's your turn. Hi, Mary.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
Our well is about 2 years old, and right now the well cap is buried in snow. And I'm just wondering whether we should be concerned about that. Is the snow plugging it, or...
No, I don't think the snow would be plugging it. If your well's 2 years old, it should be properly constructed, first of all, and then secondly, it should have an approved well cap on it. And on that well cap, there's going to be a fitting where the pump wire goes into the well cap. So next to the big steel pipe, there's a small conduit. That's connected to your well cap. And then typically on either side of that conduit, there are little vents. And the vents are there to allow the well to breathe. And so when your well kicks on, the water level in the well drops, and that well or that space in the well is replaced by air. If your well is covered by snow, there shouldn't be a bacterial issue. Air is still able to move through that. You haven't, I assume, noticed any pumping problems or any change in the aesthetic of your water this winter.
No, we haven't.
No, so you're probably okay. All right, thanks, Mary. And Carol in Plymouth, your turn. Hi, Carol.
Hi there. Larry, as usual, you do wonderful work. This is great. I want to ask a question with regard to the potential in our laws for dug wells, the older wells, as to whether there's any criteria in the laws allowing for the historic or educational issues. In other words, if a well is very unique and original in our settlement.
Sort of like a historic thing then.
Right.
Yeah. I'm only aware of one case. What I would recommend you do is you contact the Southeast Region office. I can give you that number. It's 414-263-8500, and you're going to want to talk to someone in the private water program. As Dr. Anderson referred to earlier, these dug wells can be conduits of contamination.
Right.
And that's something we really want to prevent, not just for the aquifer as a whole, but really any nearby private well is at risk from contamination. I am aware of a situation, I think it was in the southeast part of the state, where there's an old tavern, and right through the floor of the tavern, there was a dug well, and the tavern actually used it as sort of a little promotional, come see the dug well. And I think they worked out a fairly creative solution where the bottom part of the well was properly filled in and sealed so it could no longer act as a contaminant conduit. But then the upper part of the well, I think they filled it with some type of clear plastic resin that looked like water.
Oh.
So that, in fact, you flip the pictures that I've seen. I've never been to this place. The pictures I've seen, you flip up a wood box in the floor, and you see there's a plexiglass cover. They've put a little light in there. You can see the stones that were put in place for the dug well. It looks as though there was water in the well, but in fact, the bottom of that well was properly filled and sealed, but the top was taken care of, so it looks like there's still water there.
So that's a way maybe for
so
a
there
historic...
might be some creative ways to retain the historical nature, but eliminate the possibility of it acting as a contaminant source.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But you should contact the private water person in our DNR Southeast region and see what you can work out there. I'm not making any guarantees you can work something out.
And that was 263-8500.
Yes, 414 is the area code.
Yeah, 414-263-8500. Thanks, Carol.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And lots of callers. Let's go to John in Stevenson Township. John, hi.
Good morning. Right, I'm on northwest of Krivitz in Inwoods. We have a home that's 13 years old. The feet of drilling is 70 feet, casing 68. I have the invoice in front of me for a couple thousand dollars when it was drilled. But what's happening is the water has been turning brown. I noticed in a washroom it was turning black. Now, again, it's back to normal. Should I have it tested?
Our recommendation is anytime you get a change in aesthetic, it's worthwhile having it's a good idea to have your water tested. And that seems like it was a pretty clear change in aesthetic. When I hear things like orange and brown and black, I usually think of iron and manganese. So those are not the typical tests that are run. We're primarily concerned with the bacteria and nitrates. But in your situation, because it's causing a change in aesthetic, I would recommend you run a bacteria test to make sure that there hasn't something changed in the well in terms of a water safety standpoint. But you may also want to work with a water treatment company to have them test the well for iron and manganese. Have you noticed this problem in previous springs?
This has happened initially when we had the well put in.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just not familiar with the geology up northwest of Krivitz, so I don't know what the issue might be in terms of what's causing it. But you clearly got some geochemical reaction going on there.
I see, sir. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And let's see. Betsy from Iowa County wants to know how you open up a well to pour the chlorine in and how much should you pour in? That's a good question, too. What do you think?
We actually, in general, I would recommend hiring someone to do that process. Someone, you should look in the yellow pages under well driller or pump installer. They will come out and look at your situation, and they'll measure usually the depth of the well and try to figure out how much standing water is in the well. From that, they can do a calculation and figure out how much chlorine they do need to add. If you do want to do it yourself, the Department of Natural Resources does have a brochure. I think it's called You and Your Well. And within that, there are some recommendations or the process for how to treat your well is listed there. In terms of looking at taking off your well cap, again, anytime you take off the well cap, you have the ability to introduce contaminants. So the bolts that hold the well cap on, that should be pretty easy to figure out. But before you take that off, think about whether you really want to do this process yourself or hire a professional to do it.
Yeah, makes sense. Emil in Seneca, it's your turn. Hi, Emil.
Good morning. From a water health safety standpoint, I'd like to know if your guest knows or has an opinion on, we're in southwest Wisconsin specifically, where there's what's called the karst geology region, not unlike Door County, except we have much steeper topography here, much longer time of erosion here over 400 million years. And I'd like to know get an opinion on just how much more susceptible our wells are here to nitrate runoff, bacterial runoff. We're starting to see some of the larger agricultural operations introduced in our area, these confined animal feeding type operations. And there's a great deal of concern as to, the fact a lot of people feel like the teeth have been taken right out of the DNR, and the siting law that took place in 2004 that really is a blanket state coverage of siting for those types of operations is removing any kind of local say-so in how these operations are sited. The Lower Wisconsin Riverway Board has a chapter in their bylaws that say they can't have anything to say about agricultural practices on the Lower Wisconsin, and frankly, many of us feel extremely exposed, and our wells are, you know, could potentially be in jeopardy. It's a giant what if, and
yeah,
a lot of people are getting, you know, it's getting steamrolled into this county, Crawford County specifically, right now, and there just aren't enough, not enough available information for larger agricultural operations to just march in and say, "Oh, you'll be just fine."
There's no question that land use activities affect groundwater quality. We know that throughout the state, and in particularly that southwest part of the state, Vernon, Crawford, Richland counties. Those areas are susceptible, maybe even a little more susceptible than, say, southern Dane County or part of the glaciated, northeast Dane County with the glaciated areas. They are more susceptible to land use activities. I just really think that because you really don't have the ability to control land use directly around you, I think that's another good reason to sample your well water on a regular basis, you never do know when spreading of manure or some other land use activity that can affect your water quality is going to take place. And I really do think that that is one of the reasons that I recommend to folks that they do test their well on a regular basis, an annual basis.
Once a year anyway.
And yes. If there's any change in these karst areas, and now that we've had this big snowfall and a lot of areas, spring is when a lot of water recharge into the groundwater occurs, water levels may go up. And any change you notice in your water, whether it smells or it tastes, especially in these vulnerable areas, start to develop a record of results, protect your own health, but also is information you then share with the DNR and others who are dealing with the siting and the use of activities going on. So eyes and ears and testing are really important in understanding what's going on and getting it changed.
Yeah.
I think what a lot of people want to know is it all over but the crying if something gets poisoned?
Yeah. So what happens?
Well, I mean, we have to deal with each well on an individual basis. And if a well does come up contaminated, you just have to look at what aspects, where did the contamination come from? Can the well be treated? Mm-hmm. Is the well vulnerable to contamination? Is a different type of well construction needed in that area? And ultimately, then, is some type of treatment going to be permanently needed on a well? That's not something we recommend very often as a permanent treatment on a well.
And you may also want to contact the Extension, University Extension Program, because they may also have some maps of how the groundwater flows in your area. So then that'll also give you a sense of how rapidly the water is moving from one area to another as well. So that, it does go with contaminant events, and it gets diluted in the groundwater and can go away. But So it isn't always once it's there. It's there forever.
Okay. Thanks, Emil. Appreciate your call. Dave in Augusta has been waiting a long time here, so I want to get him on. Dave, hi.
Hi, good morning. I've got a question. On my farm, I had a new well put in about a year ago, and it was a sandpoint well done, dug about maybe 65 to 70 feet down, and new soil was brought in. Along with the new soil, I got pocket gophers. So I went ahead, and they were digging up the entire area that we just seeded, and I put about 15 of these pocket gopher fuse baits down in the soil without even thinking about it, and I lit them. And I got rid of the pocket gophers, but my question to you guys is, will that substance of that bait go down and into my water?
Well, without knowing what those baits are made of, that's a very difficult question to answer.
Yeah. You're going to have to go back and take a look at what they were made of, and then probably Augusta, northern Wisconsin, north central Wisconsin. Where would Steve call for, you know, some help on that?
I would probably start with figuring out what's in the bait, and then secondly, probably working with a water treatment company to see if there's a test available. You know, we have a lot of labs in the state set up around bacteria and nitrates because those are two predominant contaminants. There are also a number of labs in the state that run metals. But depending upon what type of compound is in the fuse bait, without knowing if sounds as though this is some type of smoke bomb or explosive device, then, yeah, that's getting into some pretty specific chemistry.
You may want to also, many of the manufacturers will have some information what you really want to know is its persistence and its solubility. Many of these should be designed to not last forever, because they want you to buy them again and reapply again. So it may be that the bacteria in the soil will biodegrade the chemical. So you may be able to do a search on the internet and get some information about it.
Now, in terms of actually getting your well tested, how do you go about doing that? What do you do?
At our DNR website, we have, if you go to the main DNR website and look under the Drinking Water and Groundwater Program, click on that link, and then on the left side, you'll see something called Information for Consumers. And underneath that, you'll see a list of certified labs. So what I would recommend is go to that website, that lists all the certified labs in the state. Just call the lab that's closest to you. And say you want to request a bacteria or nitrate sampling kit, make sure they do run both. And then they should come with instructions as to how to collect the sample. One thing they will say is that it does have a short sort of shelf life. Between the time you collect the sample, you do need to make sure that it gets to the lab, usually in less than 48 hours. So you want to, if you have to mail the sample, you want to make sure you take that into account.
Yeah, okay.
In the county health departments for the pregnant women or newborns, you can contact them and they will facilitate, whether there's a fee or not, getting the sample done. So they're a good resource to get you information as well.
And the whole point is get your well tested. This is probably a good time of the year to do it, is any?
Yeah, just as long as you pick one time a year to do it, I think that's the most important thing. I talked to a number of people that haven't sampled their well since it was drilled. And
that's not a good thing.
It's not a good thing.
Okay. Thank you both very much for being with us today. Really appreciate it. The time flew by, didn't it? Steve Allis is Drinking and Groundwater Regional Supervisor for the Department of Natural Resources. And Dr. Henry Anderson is Chief Medical Officer for the Wisconsin Department of Health and Family Services. Great to talk with them. And I'm sure we'll be doing more shows on this. Appreciate having them come by today. Well, coming up, you know, it's lambing season in Wisconsin, and we're going to talk about lambs and sheep and spinning wool and all kinds of good things coming up next year on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.